to another episode of the William Branham Historical Research Podcast. I'm your host, John Collins, the author and founder of William Branham Historical Research at william-branham.org, and with me I have my very special guest, Pia Hugo, former member of Harvest Rock Church. Pia, it's good to have you on and to talk through your story. I've been reading through your email, which is very brief, but then we talk some more, and it's so fascinating. I think our listeners are going to be very excited to hear you. Maybe if you could just take a moment and introduce yourself, tell everybody a little bit about yourself.
Hey, John. Thank you so much for having me here. I am a subscriber and a follower, and I really appreciate what you do for the kingdom. So, yeah, I'm excited to be here. Right now, my husband and I, we are missionaries to the Philippines. I am a Filipino, born and raised for 20 years before coming here to the United States for good. And so now we go back and forth. I mainly do, I guess you could say spiritual healing, and also trauma-informed counseling. So, one of the things I do is I go into like safe houses in the Philippines where I counsel the girls, the young women who have been sexually abused or domestically abused or human trafficked. So those are the three categories. It's not an easy ministry, I have to say. But I think the reason why God chose me to be in these ministries is because I have been sexually abused. I have been domestically abused. And I've also been spiritually abused, which is really, I think, why you invited me for that last part. I definitely know what it's like to be abused by spiritual leaders above me.
I have a lot of respect for people who do all of the things that you do. I could never do it. It would just break my heart to see people who have gone through what you're describing. The spiritual abuse, I can do this because I get so angry whenever I see that somebody's being abused against their will, because in many ways, I know it can never be as bad as the other things you describe, but in many ways, it's more enduring because the person who is a victim of the spiritual abuse believes that it's divinely inspired spiritual abuse. And so their brain just connects it with God, and they just suffer through this abuse. I would do anything within my power to break people from this.
Yeah, well, I have seen some of your videos, and I think that's exactly what you're doing. And you've actually helped me, John. One of the things that I'm realizing is really how, like NAR, you know, Harvest Rock Church is part of NAR, and how really cultic the whole system is. So I guess I should start there. I met Jay On, who is one of the, I guess he's considered like a super apostle over NAR. Definitely one of the people who promoted it, you know, like some apostles and prophets of NAR don't even want to acknowledge that they're part of NAR, but I think Shay is very proud of that. He wrote a book where he just talks about, you know, how they're like on the cutting edge and God's chosen leaders for today. So I met Che when I was only 19 years old. I told you I lived in the Philippines, you know, for the first part of my life. But I was dating his brother. Sorry, not his brother, his wife's brother. So his wife, Sue On, is the sister of my ex-husband. So I am no longer with her brother, but we were dating back, oh my gosh, 1986 is when I first met the Ons. And, you know, I guess there's a reason why cultish leaders are very successful. There is something about their charisma, the way they carry themselves, it just draws you in. And I actually came here to the United States very broken. I mentioned that I was sexually abused as a child. And, you know, and so coming here to the United States, not knowing anyone, still trying to deal with all the stuff that I left behind in the Philippines. You know, I mean, my family was kind of dysfunctional. Not really going to get into that here anyway. But yeah, so by the time I met Che and Sue, I was ripe for the pickings, so, as they say. I hung on their every word. You know, they led me to the Lord. So I went from being a Catholic to a Protestant. And the first few years were actually not bad. You know, they love bombed me into their circle. And I really felt like I found my new family. So they became, and then we, you know, my husband and I, we got married in 1986. Like, it was a very fast courtship. So yeah, by the end of 86, I was already married into the family. I was already immersed in the church system. Now, back then, Cheon was not yet part of NAR. He was part of a different cult, I should say, called, now they're called Sovereign Grace Ministries. And it wasn't until, I guess, 1994 that his associate pastor, Lou Engel, and Che started Harvest Rock Church. So I have been with them from that time, that you know, very early age in my life. And I was just telling you before, you know, we started this show, it's been almost 40 years of really drinking the Kool-Aid by the pitchers, you know, like not little sips. Like, I was very much immersed in the whole system. I want to share a book that I've been rereading. Can I do that? It's not even a spiritual book. It's called Shadows of the Neanderthal, Illuminating the Beliefs That Limit Our Organizations by David Hutchins. So this is a book that I had to read when I was getting my social science credential. I was a high school teacher here in Los Angeles for 23 years. I taught government, economics, and history. So as part of my social science credential, I had to have some like psychology units. So I read this book, and it came at the right time because that was also when I was leaving Harvest Rock Church. I had just gotten divorced. And yeah, so this book, I am rereading it because it really is about leaving cults, leaving very toxic environments. And, you know, the author talks about this thing called mental models. Are you familiar with that term?
I am.
So, I'm just going to read this. So, mental models was a concept coined in 1943 by Kenneth Craik, and he suggested that the mind constructs small-scale models of reality that it uses to anticipate events. Mental models help shape behavior, including approaches to solving problems and performing tasks. So I feel like that's what happened to me, is I totally just embraced this mental model that was presented to me by my former brother-in-law, Cheon. And it, despite the fact that I was educated. You know, I had a degree in economics from George Washington University. Like, you know, I wasn't, you know, an ignorant dummy when I joined the church, but it's like a very slow process, you know, of conditioning, where it was absolute obedience to your senior pastor, absolute obedience to your husband. And it's almost like my brain just shut down. And so when I'm reading this book, you know, it talks about these five cavemen in the cave, and all they know is the cave, and they think that's it. Like, this is our world. We can't go out there because it's very dangerous. We don't know what's out there. So we may be miserable, and we're, you know, it's kind of funny. It's like they're sucking on rocks and eating dead bugs to survive, but that's all they know. You know, it's safe, it's familiar. So they just stay there until someone, actually one of the cavemen, ventures out and realizes, whoa, you know, like, it's a big, beautiful world out there. And he goes back to the cave and tries to tell all the other cavemen, like, hey, you gotta come out. Like, we were told a falsehood, you know? And so, of course, we know he's telling the truth, but the cavemen think, oh, no, 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 this is, you know, you're dangerous. And they kill him. They kill the truth teller. So I'm really finding, you know, just interesting parallels that as I'm learning from you, John, and other podcasters, you know, exposing NAR for what it is, exposing my former brother-in-law for who he is. It's almost like I'm opening myself up to this big, beautiful world and realizing, man, I have been sitting in a dark cave too long. And I really, you know, I really want to help other cavemen come out of the caves, come out of their legalistic structures. And, you know, I think of that verse from 1 Corinthians. I wrote it down. 1 Corinthians 13, verse 12. And it talks about how we can only know in part, right? We see through a glass darkly. And it's not till, you know, we get to heaven and we see Jesus, like, oh, so you're Jesus. This is your, there's a real Jesus. This is the real heaven, you know? Because again, all we have here are just shadows and, you know, our own interpretations even, right, of the Bible. And so it can be very confusing. And in churches like Harvest Rock Church and other NAR churches, it can be downright deceptive when the leaders, the preachers, the pastors, are kind of giving us this false narrative of how church should be like. And I think the greatest harm that my former brother-in-law, Che-An, did was when it became apparent to me that I had married an abusive narcissist. You know, my ex-husband was a cruel man, and I even suffered, you know, not just mental and emotional abuse, but also towards the end of our marriage, physical abuse. And I told Che and Sue, like, I can't do this anymore. You know, this is like, I'm either gonna like take my own life, or, I mean, he could kill me, right? And we had three kids at that time. They were very young. When I finally told the truth, I had been kind of protecting my husband for a while, but I finally told Che and Sue, like, you know, your brother is, really harming me and the kids. And their reaction, I guess, is typical of these kinds of churches, you know, just submit more, obey more, work harder. You know, the burden is always placed on the woman, and the guy basically gets away, you know, scot-free. And so I think I finally got the courage to leave when my parents also immigrated, because, you know, they were living in the Philippines, but they immigrated here to the U.S. And I told them the truth, and they were, first of all, aghast. They were like, "We think you're part of a cult." And I should have listened to them. I wasn't convinced that I was part of a cult yet. Remember, I'm still drinking the NAR Kool-Aid. But I did agree with them that my life was in danger, right? My life and the lives of my children needed to be protected. And my senior pastor, Che, wasn't doing anything to protect me. And so with my parents' help, I got out, filed for divorce. And yeah, and so, you know, I was able to leave. Well, actually, truth be told, I got kicked out. So another long story that I'm not going to get into, but, you know, I would still go. Okay. That's how, that's how much I really was into all the teachings and, you know, the fellowship. You know, I think that's the hardest thing about leaving a cult is the fellowship, you know, the friends. So I wasn't ready to leave all of that yet. I had already been divorced, but, you know, I still wasn't convinced that the church wasn't, you know, what was really bad for me, but I didn't know that. So I continued to go until finally my brother-in-law said, this is, you know, this is probably not the right place for you. Now that I'm divorced from his brother-in-law. So long story short, I went to a different church, much healthier, word-based, non-charismatic. And, but later on, after, I don't know, 20 years of that, I found myself in another NAR church. You know, they say, like, once a charismatic, one, you know, always a charismatic. So I just decided I'm going to give it another try. And that also turned out quite badly. So here I am. I'm now 60 years old, John, and I am just now really stepping back, like a hard step back, and looking at all the things that I had once really believed in. And again, I really appreciate the fact that there are people like you who are taking the time to give us hard evidence. Like, I've always been a great student. I love doing research. And, you know, I'm a historian, you know, I taught history. So I've been loving all your material, you know, because I thought NAR started with C. Peter Wagner, and I didn't know that it went all the way back to William Branham and all of them guys. So yeah, that's pretty much it, John. That's my life in a nutshell.
I hate to say this, but as you were talking, you were bringing back so many fond memories. And as the story continued, then suddenly you started making all of these triggers in my head fire of all of the bad memories as I'm going through. Because I remember many of the things. So I was born and raised in Branhamism, as many people know. It was a good life for me. It was a really happy life. And I can use the phrase love bombing, and it kind of makes sense, but it was more than that. In the 1980s, there was this weird feeling of family when you're in these types of groups. Mm-hmm. And there was no, I guess, exposure of all of the hidden stuff. So all you had was the happy. You had none of the bad. Mm-hmm. And I had no reason to leave. I had no reason to want to leave, but I started watching some of the leadership doing things that just, it didn't sit right with me. And here I am, you know, in the 1980s, I was in my teens, so I obviously couldn't do anything about it. But as time progressed, I started noticing that there was a shift in the people themselves. And I'm not talking about just the rank and file members in the church. I'm talking about even the leadership. There was a shift. And I think what happened, the access to information, as time continues, access to information gets more easily available. And so some of the critical information starts to seep out. I have, through my research, I have gone through history, and I've seen that this thing ebbs and flows. It'll start out the love bombing, everybody's happy, and then everybody finds out, then it turns destructive, then it gets super destructive, then it just reinvents itself and comes out as something else. So where you say gnar, I may say latter rain, I may say, you can go all the way back through time, and just this just pattern just keeps happening. But when you mention the book, I've mentioned this a couple times on the podcast, I was on a business trip, my business was, I was working with the medical industry, and I had to go to a company out in Raleigh, North Carolina. So I'm in Raleigh, and I had a connecting flight in Atlanta as I'm flying out of Atlanta, and I just happened to be sitting next to probably some famous psychologist and had the most wonderful conversation. When he found out that I had came out of what I did, he was just fascinated, and I became his guinea pig. So he's teaching me, he's trying to learn from me, he's trying to extract my information. And then at the end of the, towards the end of the flight, he starts recommending some books that I read, one of which I've mentioned several times, Propaganda. When I read this, I began to understand there's a psychological effect that they're using. It's a technique. But still, I go back to those happy times, and I think through, I have friends who were in the ministry who were really, really good people, but I watched the system change them over time into, I don't know if I can say bad people, but they don't do good things. I'll say it like that. And so I can see the shift in the pattern that's emerging because of just the sheer foundation of the movement. And then I don't think I've mentioned this before. Some of the books that he had me read, which I did read them, were books by authors that a lot of my listeners would just say, oh no, you can never read this guy. But yeah. I'm not like this. I want to know. I want to read. One of them, I don't know if I've mentioned this before, one of them was by, I think it was Joseph Campbell, A Hero with 1,000 Faces. And I read it, and obviously I didn't agree with everything, because you can't as a Christian. But what I did pick up out of that book is the patterns that emerge from all of the pagan religions. And then our, as humans, our way to connect to those patterns. And you can see those patterns all through even Hollywood. Lion King, for example. You've got the young Simba who rises up, right? And you've got the very powerful father. You've got the loving. This system really connects with people, and people want this. And when I use that pattern and apply it to some of the doctrines and teachings, it's a little bit scary, because you're faced with the question, are they doing this on purpose, or is this a learned strategy? Are they putting these things out in a way that people connect with them, because there's a lot of money in it if you really think about it, or do they really believe it? And the problem that I had once I started reading the Bible over and over and over again, some of those patterns aren't compatible with Christianity. But you see those same patterns begin to emerge, especially in the New Apostolic Reformation. So I was faced with the question, A, was this a learned thing, or did they just absorb it? But B, how has it managed to keep manifesting itself from movement to movement through all of this time?
Great question. So I'm going to, I want to piggyback on what you're saying. I can't answer the question, but I will, I will add to it. So the book, this book, it comes from Plato's The Republic. It's kind of based on he wrote.
And that was one of the books that he had me read, by the way.
It's a great, you know, it's a classic for a reason, right? And in the Republic, Plato talks about the parable of the cave. So very similar, right, to what I just said. And this is what Plato came up with. This is his conclusion after talking about the cave and how all the truth tellers who dared to leave and explore, you know, they get killed, they get stoned, right? It's always a truth teller that gets harmed. Everybody else just like, no, leave us alone, you know, we're drinking the Kool-Aid, everything's fine, you know. So Plato said this, we're all misguided cave dwellers operating under incomplete or distorted perceptions of reality, and we violently resist others who have different perceptions. Violent. And that word really jumped out at me, you know, that it would be great if we all were truly open-minded, you know, and if we all like, well, this is what my parents taught me, but maybe let me explore, let me try, you know. And maybe it's the way my parents raised me. They really did, even though they were Catholic, they really did raise me to have critical thinking skills. And so even though I was seeped in the New Apostolic Reformation teachings, there was always that thinking in the back of my mind, like, is this even scriptural? Like, is this even, you know? And now that I have fully stepped back, you know, it's very glaring to me. And I think the most obvious reason why we should now take a good hard look at the results, you know, like you said, whether the leader does it knowingly or unknowingly, whether he's just really a wolf devouring sheep and they just want to build their own empire and make a lot of money, like I'm sure there are some like that. I honestly feel the vast majority of them, this is all they know. Like, this is the cave. This is the cave that they grew up in and they like it and they're getting benefits from it. So, you know, maybe they're the head cave dwellers. So it works for them. And, you know, it's a system that they are very familiar with and it's predictable, you know, and again, that's part of human nature. We want what's predictable. You know, we go into church and we always sit in the same seat, right? And we're creatures of habit. So my point is, I agree with Plato, you know, that we're all just trying to figure out this world that God made. He knows what's what. He's not confused. But it's okay for us to be confused sometimes. It's okay for us to question, you know, like, I didn't know about that. You know, I remember when I was still going to Harvest Rock Church and I was part of a life group and I was reading this psychological book, right? And I think it was Christian. I don't know. I don't remember. But I brought up something, you know, when we were having a discussion in our Bible study, and the life group leader just looked at me like, you know, where did you get that idea? I'm like, oh, I'm reading a book. Oh, what book is that? And I said the book. I don't even remember now. It's so many years ago. And he's like, and he's just like, you know, and he writes it down. And then later on, he pulls my husband aside and says, do you know that your wife is reading this book? And, you know, I mean, my husband, my ex-husband, you know, he might be a controller, but he doesn't care, you know, what I do. And when I'm, you know, when I actually have a downtime and I'm reading a book in bed, like, you know, he's not going to be like, we didn't have that kind of a marriage. Okay.
Yeah.
I do now. I have an amazing husband now. I'm remarried and we're partners in every way. But no, this was my husband who didn't care about me. Okay. And so he tells us, the life group leader, like, nope, never heard of that book. And then he gets a scolding. He gets a stern, like, admonition from the leader saying, well, you need to screen every book that Pia reads, and, you know, and you need to come to us. Like, you need to make sure, filter it through us too, blah, blah, blah. And then it went all the way up to Che and Sue, you know, and she's actually asking me, like, what is this I hear about some book that you're reading? And I, that's when I realized, like, what is going on? Oh my gosh, you know, like what did I just step into?
Have you ever wondered how the Pentecostal movement started, or how the progression of modern Pentecostalism transitioned through the Latter Rain, Charismatic, and other fringe movements into the New Apostolic Reformation? You can learn this and more on William Branham Historical Research's website, william-branham.org. On the books page of the website, you can find the compiled research of John Collins, Charles Paisley, Stephen Montgomery, John McKinnon, and others, with links to the paper, audio, and digital versions of each book. You can also find resources and documentation on various people and topics related to those movements. If you want to contribute to the cause, you can support the podcast by clicking the Contribute button at the top. And as always, be sure to like and subscribe to the audio or video version that you're listening to or watching. On behalf of William Branham Historical Research, we want to thank you for your support. I had a guy tell me one time, we were in a meeting, in a business meeting, and he said, we're all just big gumballs in a big gumball machine, and you never know who's going to turn the dial. And at the time he said this, I was thinking, that is the most useless statement I have heard anybody make in a meeting. That has no relevance to anything. But the funny part of it is, now that I'm doing what I'm doing and I'm examining all of these different movements, all of these apostolic networks, that statement actually applies. Because you never know, when you're going to church, you never know what the pastor's going to be. You never know who the small group leader's going to be. It's like you don't know who's going to turn that dial, and you don't know what he's going to believe and how.
Right.
It actually applies. And it gives relevance to, I have people tell me that sometimes I'll say things like I did just a few minutes ago, and I don't really give a good example. So I'm going to give an example that kind of binds all this together. Apostolic authority, spiritual covering. When I'm talking about things that get progressively worse and things that may have good intention, the leaders may actually believe that they're doing good, there's a pattern that emerges, especially within the more strict versions of Christianity, where people come in contact with outside information that doesn't really agree with the core theology. Mm-hmm. And so to keep them from quote-unquote straying, you have to kind of watch them. And so what happens is people will watch each other and see what they do. Maybe they're reading a book. Maybe they're watching a television show. Well, then you have to confront them because, hey, if you keep doing this, you're going to go astray. And they feel like it's their responsibility to lead you instead of the Holy Spirit to lead you.
Right.
And so from its core inception, I think it was good intentions. You look back at some of the, like the Puritan religion, the Quakers, you can see that that was their lifestyle. That's just how they lived. The problem is, as time goes on, some of those things, because they're not really good structures, as the outside world grows more complex, these primitive structures can't fit with the outside world.
Exactly.
And so you're suddenly faced with this clash between cultures, right? The problem is, in the Pentecostal charismatic movement, that clash between cultures is seen as a battle between good and evil. The evil spirits have now taken over this world, and they don't really recognize that it's not so much that, it's just that the culture has shifted from this doctrine that is stagnant. But instead of trying to adapt, they want to uphold the stagnant doctrine. So this emerges as, well, they're getting outside information. What they really need is we need a system where we can have somebody who's watching over them to make sure they don't read the book. So let's create an apostolic governance committee or whatever they want to call it, spiritual covering. And they tried this with the shepherding movement. They created the shepherds who were watching the shepherds of, you know, cascading authoritarian control, and realized that this is bad in practice. This turns very good people to do very bad things. Mm-hmm. And then, like I said, the cycle continues. People will forget about that, and history mm-hmm. repeats itself.
Yes. Well, it's just like going from one cave to the next cave.
Yeah.
Where you have the head cave dweller in one cave saying, no, this got to be like this. And so you're like sneaking out of that cave like, oh, no, I don't want that. But you go to the next cave and you just meet the next head cave dweller over there. So, you know, I think the point that we're both trying to make, John, is why do we limit ourselves to living in caves? You know, we were never meant to live in caves. You know, God created this big, beautiful world. And of course there's evil, right? Of course there's non-believers. And I still believe in, you know, the Great Commission. Like, I'm a missionary. So we go, you know, to the Philippines, and I actually preach in churches over there, you know, and because I am charismatic, I will pray over people, you know. I'm not going to be like a Benny Hinn, but, you know, I pray for people for their healing and whatever, you know. But it's just we have really allowed ourselves to be so limited in how church should look like, how our fellowship times should look like, how our Bible study times should look like, you know. And you're absolutely right. There's so much monitoring, right, coming from, you know, the higher ups, that you're almost paranoid to, you know, can I watch this movie? Like, you know, well, there's no sex in it, but, you know, it's not, you know, Christian per se. And like, it just gets ridiculous, because I remember when I started dating my husband. Right now is a firefighter. He's as down to earth and as grounded as you're going to get, which is wonderful, you know. And he did not have any of this like religious background. He was not charismatic when I first met him. He really isn't charismatic now, to be honest, you know. But hey, we both love God. We both love the Bible, and you know, we have Christian friends, and we keep it simple these days. But anyway, when I first met him and we were dating and getting to know one another, and by now I'm in my early 40s, right? So I got divorced, you know, in my, 30 years old, and met my husband in my early 40s. And he's bringing up movies. And I'm like, nope, didn't watch that, nope. And then we're listening to music, like, what kind of music do you like? And honestly, all I had been listening to was just worship music. So, you know, and he's bringing up artists, and it's almost embarrassing. Like, you know, I don't know any of those artists. And he's like, where have you been? Like, what, you know, like, what have you been listening to? And it's like, that's the problem. Like,
yeah.
I honestly, you know, I didn't feel comfortable. I didn't trust myself to even figure out what kind of music I like, you know, what kind of movies do I like? Because again, there was always this expectation of only watching, reading, listening to, you know, NAR approved materials.
Yes.
I'm going to put it that way. So, I mean, I laugh about it now, John, but in reality, it's scary and it's very tragic, because I'm one of the lucky ones that got out, you know, in time. I still have friends who are in marriages, for example. And again, I am not one to like get a divorce, like, no. But if you are being physically harmed, and you know, maybe there are listeners right now, right? If you're being physically harmed, if you're being emotionally harmed, mentally harmed by your partner, then at least give yourself you know, a time of separation, because it's just so sad when I, you know, I have people come to me for prayer and they've been in these very abusive marriages or abusive partnerships and they don't even know how to get out. You know, we're talking about systems, but I want to bring it down to like the microcosm, right? The individual people under these systems who can't even think for themselves, you know, women who've shut off their brains and they really truly feel like this is it, you know, like, so going back to that cave analogy, maybe they're the ones in the darkest parts of the cave that nobody, you know, nobody sees them. Nobody wants to hear their stories. They're sitting right next to us at church and we don't even know, you know, the kind of traumas that they carry, and they're not getting the healing that they need because of this, like, oh, let's just all hold hands and sing Kumbaya, right? And, yeah. You know, let's all just pretend. Let's all just continue with this facade, yeah, that we're really happy in this cave.
I was thinking as you're talking about the music, as you can see, I'm a musician and music fascinates me, but the study of historical music as it relates to Christianity, for me, it's a crazy interesting study that's fully untapped. I grew up hearing sermon after sermon after sermon, pre-recorded, because we listened to recordings of William Branham, of how the Beatles music was awful. So Beatles was number one. Elvis was number two. We can't listen to Elvis. So he's talking about, you know, music from the 40s, 50s, and 60s. The first time I heard the Beatles, I was like, well, this sounds a lot less than some of the modern Christian music. It sounds, yeah, it's not so bad. They're talking about love and peace and happiness. Why would we not want this?
Right.
But the funny part of it is, I remember hearing sermons where they were specifically condemning the beat style, the different types of phrases that you hear in the music. And then fast forward 15 years, a decade later, when music culture has shifted around them, well, now the new culture is the evil one, and the old culture actually makes it into the music.
Yes, yes.
I'll never forget my surprise when I left. We weren't allowed to listen to rock and roll music at all. I left, and people are kind of like your husband was with you. I would have coworkers or employees who would say, hey, did you hear the song by, and they would list off some song from the 80s that I didn't hear. And so I'm listening to new music. The moment I came across Midnight Special, I nearly had to walk out of the building. I was so shocked because we had Christian words to the, basically to the entire music of this. They had actually robbed a rock and roll song, and yet they're preaching and condemning rock and roll. But the decades had shifted, and so they didn't really recognize. So the very thing they're preaching about really is modern culture when it comes right down to it. Like you said about the cave, we want to live in this cave. If everything else grows up around us, we're going to stay in this cave. The problem is, it's usually the more fundamentalist types of Christians that do this, the ones who are very strict by the book, by the code, and they don't even recognize that some of the codes don't apply. For example, it changes the way that you read the Bible. When Paul writes a letter, he's writing to an ancient culture that no longer exists. And many of the things that he says, some of it is applicable, yes, but not all of it really is. For example, how many of you are going to go out of the building and walk down the street and greet someone with a holy kiss? You don't do this in today's world. They might slug you, right? You just don't do that. Another good example, I've used this one a few times. There are certain Pentecostals that believe that the Old Covenant law must be upheld today, and yet they're eating shellfish, which was one of the laws. You can't do this. Another funny one is that there's a law that you can't mix clothing. You can't have two types of clothing. They believe that the reason for this is whenever the warring nations would come, if they took captives, you could tell your people from their people by the clothing that was worn, which kind of makes sense if that's true. But that law today, I mean, even what I'm wearing right now has mixed clothing, right?
Right.
So,
right.
Two types of clothing. So, mm-hmm. if you try to remain static, like you said, in that cave, mm-hmm. you're totally missing not only the world around you, you're also missing what the Bible is actually saying to you.
Yeah. Well, I think of what Jesus said to the Pharisees when he said, you know, like, you hypocrites, like you would strain a gnat but swallow camels. And that I think is the biggest thing I have against these spiritually abusive leaders. You know, some of them are actual wolves, I think. Definitely if you're out there having affairs with your secretaries or going after your young interns, you know, I mean, yeah, like, please step down, you know. But even those, like my former brother-in-law, you know, like, I mean, he's not a bad guy, right? I mean, he's running for governor of California, and I'm not going to tell you not to vote for him or vote for him. Like, that's, you know, like, that, my experience is my experience. But I will say this, sometimes in the zeal of these very ultra religious, you know, holier than thou type of spiritual leaders and pastors, you know, they're so careful about, you know, don't wear that dress because you might cause men to stumble. Don't even wear makeup or whatever. And yet, they themselves might be lusting and looking at porn behind closed doors, you know, or they treat women like they're second class citizens, you know? And so that's why Jesus said, it's like, you forget the bigger loss of mercy and grace and compassion and, you know, helping the poor and all of that, you know? And, you know, and I think that's why, even as I'm deconstructing from some of the, again, NAR theologies and doctrinal practices that I've been so immersed in, there are some things that I know I'm called to do. You know, it doesn't change the fact that my husband and I still have our school in the Philippines, you know, for poor children. We have our safe house for abused women and children, you know, in the Philippines. Like, it, when I'm over there, John, it's very clear cut. Like, I don't have to worry about what is politically correct and what is, you know, like, my conversation with people over there, I don't have to watch what I say because of certain people in the room. I mean, there is so much division going on right now within the political arena, the religious arena here in America, that it can make your head spin, you know, really. And so people sometimes, you know, they pray for me. They say, oh, you're going back to the Philippines. Well, we'll pray for you. And I say, yes, you know, I'll take the prayers. But honestly, when I go there, like, it's, I have sometimes an easier time when I'm over there because I love what I do. You know, I mean, it's hard listening to the stories of these girls, but it's what I was called to do. I'm equipped for it. So, you know, I consider it an honor, right, and a privilege to be able to help the people over there. It's when I come back here that I am just like, you know, I just spend my days watching YouTube podcasts and re-educating myself and seeing, what did I miss? Like, what am I supposed to be listening to now, Lord? Like, honestly, that, like, every day I ask God, like, I know you want to teach me things that I may not have had eyes to see when I was looking this way and kind of like with blinders, you know, now that my blinders are off, I'm looking around like, whoa, like so much to see, so much to explore out here in the real world, because I no longer am in a dark cave.
Now, see, I'm kind of the opposite, because I view the world, I don't know if you have seen the movie, but I view the world much more like the Matrix after you take the pill and you start to see all of the stuff.
Yes.
I see it, all it takes is just a little bit of studying history, and you start to see how all of this mess has crept into the modern church. And I think, I've been trying to put some sort of a thought behind how this happened, but I think the biggest thing is that in America, because of the way that the systems have been built with regards to religion, it has to be run as a business. There's really no way around it. If you want to pay the light bill, you have to have it has to run as a business. And you have so many competing forms of entertainment that suck people out of the church. You have to do things exciting to bring them back in. And where do you go to get your exciting church? You go to the charismatic movement. You go to the New Apostolic Reformation, because they know how to hold the big conventions. They know how to bring the lights, cameras, action.
Right.
I went to a local church that when we left, we started just exploring churches. I actually haven't joined anything, because I want to not be constrained to a box. And I went to this local church that I thought was just this humble little place, and I sat down, and I'm sitting here waiting for the worship music to begin. I'm expecting an organ and a piano and soft music, and then suddenly the smoke and lights start billowing. And I'm like, what on earth have you done, and why did you do it?
Oh, no.
It's not that I'm condemning that. I really don't care, but they borrowed that from the entertainment industry. And in my opinion, when you mix the entertainment industry with Christianity, what you get is a mixture, and the mixture isn't Christianity, it's something else.
Yeah.
And the sad truth is, American Christianity has become so difficult to navigate. When I'm talking to someone and I just want to have a casual conversation, I really don't want to talk about what they believe and why, because it always comes back to me having to walk on eggshells, because I'm going to say something that they're going to think, there's a demon in our midst. And I don't want, if I'm doing a business operation, I will never get involved with a business where that's their introduction. I'm a Christian businessman. Those are usually the guys who rob me blind. But anyway, this has been crazy fun. I thoroughly enjoyed myself, and you brought back so many memories. Thank you so much for doing this.
Oh, I'm very happy to be here, and you can invite me back anytime, John.
If you had any advice to give people who are stuck in this type of religion, and they're stuck in that cave that you mentioned, what advice would you give them to get out of the cage?
If someone comes in and says, hey, there's a big world out there, you know, and no matter how crazy they may sound, and no matter how different their perspective might be, at least listen. You know, it starts with just listening. It starts with being aware of the fact that we all have mental models. It's not good or bad. It's how we were raised. It's what we're familiar with. But if there's this deep void, you know, deep down inside, a still small voice saying, don't you think this is a little off? You know, like after hearing a sermon and you start to wonder like, huh, was that even scriptural, right? And definitely if you are hurting, whether emotionally or mentally or spiritually, you know, you just know that things are going on around you, either around you or to you, like what happened with me, you know, by all means, you know, talk to someone outside of your little circle, because I know God's not happy when we are being harmed by leaders or even by our fellow believers, you know, like Paul. You know, the thing that I don't like is how some of these pastors and apostles and prophets are saying, oh, you know, accuser. John is an accuser of the brethren, you know, like they're, you know, like, don't go to social media, you know, it's just full of haters and naysayers and they're going to lead you to the devil, you know? And the thing about that is that it's insulting, isn't it? It's insulting to our intelligence. And so I would say to anyone out there who is starting to wonder, am I in the right place? You know, are these people around me safe? Listen to that still small voice, you know, because the Holy Spirit is always speaking to us. He's always showing us things, and we really should have our eyes wide open. You know, Jesus says constantly, like, he who has ears to hear, let him hear. He who has eyes to see, let him see. So be aware, be curious, you know, be open-minded, and just know, you know, Jesus said, I am with you, you know, I will never leave you nor forsake you. If Jesus is your Lord and Savior and you fully have put your trust in him, then trust that he's not going to mislead you. He's not going to bring you down the wrong path, because, you know, if you ask for a fish, he's not going to give you a snake, right? If you ask for a bread, he's not going to give you a stone. We need to trust that Jesus, Holy Spirit, Father God, you know, they love us, right? They speak to us, and and he wants us to go out there and look at how beautiful and how creative and how large God and his world really is.
It's very good advice. Well, thanks again for doing this.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Well, if you've enjoyed our show and you want more information, you can check us out on the web. You can find us at william-branham.org. For more about the dark side of the New Apostolic Reformation, you can read Weaponized Religion, From Christian Identity to the NAR, available on Amazon, Kindle, and Audible.